Good morning to you. Welcome into today's program. We're looking at rate increases coming down the line and people not engaging. Also, we're looking at early childhood sector there to begin withdrawing services across Galway at the end of the month. We'll be going to that today. Also, the Blood Transfusion Board are looking for your assistance. We're looking at invasive species today on the program. And again, the Blood Transfusion Board are looking for assistance. That unfortunate tragedy that unfolded last week with that young man falling off a tractor and then losing his life. We'll be looking at that. Indeed, huge sadness right across, indeed, the whole county on that. Today also we go gardening with Anne McKeown. We're also looking for past pupils of St. Raphael's College in Loughrea. That and loads more between now and 12 midday. Just don't go anywhere else. A very good morning to you. Now, if you want to get in contact with us on this absolutely beautiful Thursday morning, feel free to do so. You can WhatsApp us straight away to 086 38 33 55 3. That's 086 38 33 55 3 today if you want to get in contact with us or if there's something bothering you today. And again, condolences to everybody in the Cylon area on the tragic loss of a young man who was just working on a tractor. Fell, spent the weekend in Beaumont and unfortunately lost his fight for life. To his mom and dad and to his extended family, to his grandparents on both sides as well, to his colleagues and friends in St. Charlotte's College, to the teachers and to everybody else in that general area. He had so much to live for. He really had so much to live for. And unfortunately, the tragedy has struck. And again, I think from talking to so many people this morning about it, it has affected the whole community. The whole community are behind his mom and his dad, and they're behind both sets of grandparents and the whole lot. I mean, the story itself is just so sad for them to cope with. But our thoughts are with them today and anybody else who lost a loved one as well. There's another crisis coming down the line, though, where there's a whole situation in relation to there's a rate increase coming, which we know has been going on for a couple of years at this stage. But engagement is needed because in Galway City, there's 3,776 commercial rateable businesses in Galway City. That delivers approximately €40 million a year to the council's finances. Only 371 businesses have engaged. That's nearly 1%. And the key message really this morning is don't throw the information in the drawer. Engage now because these bills will be knocking on your door and on your desk very quickly. Councillor Niamh McNeilis, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and thanks for having us on again about this.
That's just to summarise it from there. I cannot believe, with all the work that's been done by yourself, by the Galway Chamber of Commerce and many other people, that out of the 3,776 commercial businesses, only 371 have engaged.
Now, sorry, I just correct that. Actually, it was 411. It was the total amount of representations okay. That were done in the end. What it is, we have 3,700 businesses in the city centre, the city of Galway, which is from within.
Are you with me there, Councillor McNeilis? I don't know what's happened there. I'll just wait for a second, if you don't mind, to see, can I just get him back up there again? Just let me do this and this, and John is working on it outside as well. Let me do this and this and see, can I just get him back up there again? It's very important and too important indeed. We just have to go and do this and this and see, can we just make it work again? It's just too important because what we're trying to say to people in business, it doesn't matter if you have the smallest office. Are you with me, Councillor McNeilis? Are you, Councillor?
Yeah.
You're back with me again there. Can you stay where you are there if you don't mind? But it doesn't matter whether you've only a small office or a big shop or nothing. If you're paying rates to Galway City Council, you need to listen to this piece.
Yeah, you need to listen to this. So everybody's going to receive a letter with the rate demand on the 15th of September onwards. And in that will be an explanatory letter to explain what the rate is and the valuation is, the cert that's been issued. Because this is a cert that hasn't been done in about 5 years. We also will have an information leaflet in it telling those 30,000 plus ratepayers that you will have to engage now. You've only one last chance to engage with them. And that is actually to go into the valuation office with a walk-in clinic and just query your rate for it. Now, if you then want to go on and challenge it, there's a cost involved in it because up until now it's been free, it's been open to the public, everybody can actually engage with them. But now there's a statutory fee involved with it. And as we said before, Keith, is that you're going to hire, would say, an evaluation officer to help you.
Yeah.
There'll be a cost about that. But this is your last chance saloon. So I'm asking people, when they get their rate bill, to look at it and to engage with the valuation office and find out exactly, you know, why they're being increased or decreased. The likelihood is we see the stats here, is about 60% of the businesses will actually probably decrease in their rate because they've looked at the property value, they've looked at the rental income on it, and it may have been wrong in the past, and the unit may have been split in half or something. But there is going to be that rise of 30% of the business across the city who will have a rate increase. And they're the ones that have to engage, because in some cases, as the last time that we went into them, there was a number of retailers in the city centre who had, their rate was going to be three times their actual rent. And thankfully, we were able to change that anomaly, and we're expecting that those ratepayers that were going to be charged at huge fee were scaled back on.
But I mean,
clinics are going to be between the 2nd and the 6th of October. So they really need to engage with the valuation office.
But I mean, some people that we've spoken to off the record have been hit with up to 3,000% increases. Now, I don't know what business in the country can take a 3,000, I didn't say 3%, 30%, 300, 3,000% increase in rates. Who can afford that?
Yeah, nobody can. And that's why we went in and we engaged with them and said, look, lads, hold on a second. You know, you might think that Galway is actually flying, but I mean, this unit compared to another unit somewhere else in the country is way down for it. We're budgeting that around 6% of businesses will appeal these through the high courts. And that then makes a hames of our own budget process for the city then and how we collect money. And I remember this, the commercial rates are used for street cleaning, the parks, the playgrounds, the lighting, you know, the staff,
everything,
the housing, the marketing of the city, the festivals that we have in the city that we contribute towards, all of that all comes from commercial rates. It's our biggest contributor for it. And again, as Keith, when we saw some of the businesses in the city centre and saw Till that were being, you know, and they saw that we challenged it straight away, and thankfully sense has prevailed in those. And that one with the 3,000, you know, percent increase, of course we went in and said, hold on a second, this is madness here, you know. And they've said they've engaged with that and they've looked at it and they've scaled back on that now. But I mean, it's a really, really big amount of push. But there will be about a 30% of the business in the city are facing an increase on this, and okay, they need to engage.
But when you say the High Court now, and you're talking about, if you go to the High Court, you're talking about big money. So obviously you're talking about state institutions that might look at that, the likes of CIE or University or RETU or some of those people. I mean, if it's relevant to them, I'm just saying it would only really and truly be a state institution that could afford to go to the High Court.
Yeah, in the past, CIE have gone in front of the High Court, and so have, we say, some of the wind farms. And maybe some of the phone companies have looked at it. But if you've got, we'd say, a hospitality business and you're a hotel and you're facing a very, very large increase with no justification, except the fact that you had a brilliant record a couple of years because, you know, we're based in a really good place and they've marketed their hotel completely. They've taken into account your turnover for your hospitality industry. They've taken into account, you know, what type of functions you do, what type of, you know, services you offer.
Yeah.
And in them cases, you will have a number of those businesses taken over. There's also, we'd say, a number of businesses out in Parkmore that have never been rated because they just fell through the loophole. They're going to be coming on board. They're going to be facing a new rate and they probably may be challenging as well. And they don't have to go to the High Court if they go through the whole arbitrary process and actually just turn around and question, you know, with them. There's a fee between €95 and €500 that for that. And if they engage again at that process, you know, they're saving themselves all that money than having to go into the High Court and to challenge it.
But, I mean,
but we reckon that there will be, you know, a 6% challenge by some of the businesses.
Okay. And that is their legal right to do so from there. But I mean, still, I mean, the figures haven't changed that much from 371 at 8 o'clock this morning to 411 that you've just clarified. It's still only 1.1% of the overall businesses, which, and that bothers me because I know a lot of work has been done by this, by the Chamber of Commerce, by yourself, by other interested parties, and people aren't listening.
Yeah, this process, the process started in 2020. So, I mean, look, there was that period of time with the COVID that people missed out on it. But I do think, Keith, is that all along people were getting these rates evaluations, they were stuck in a drawer, they've been put in the corner, they should all get around to that again, and they just avoided it. And I mean, look at commercial rates is a big cost every year for a business. So is insurance, and so is your wages cost. And it's low. You have to pay it, and it follows you if you don't pay it. And there's a lot of business out there that are struggling at the moment. But I mean, again, during this process, it gave us the opportunity to tell you why and how important it is to support local business at all time. So every local business, every business physically that's in the city, out of those 3,700 businesses, they employ local people. They spend their money locally. You know, they're paying mortgages in our community, those people that work in those rateable companies. But also is that they're selling product that goes into the community at all times. And that's this commercial rater. So this is why it's so important to be supporting local all the time. And to recognise why local business do so much.
Keith, everyone has to pay property tax, etc. Why should businesses be allowed to get away with without paying? Who's in charge of this tax? Is it the local authority or a government body? Like, that's somebody who has gotten the wrong...
I don't understand what the caller says. That's somebody... somebody's got the wrong things. Everybody has to pay commercial rates. And actually, you know, this is the one tax that they go after. So the rates office in Galway will follow you. So, I mean, this is something that you just don't walk away from.
That's
so I don't understand what
commercial.
The caller is
saying. I don't know why they're saying...
They don't probably understand what rates are anyway.
Yeah. Okay, they wouldn't blame businesses. It's the state of roads since around... since in Galway City, since the roundabouts have been removed, it's choked the city. Most from East Galway don't go near the city at all, this caller said. That's nothing to do with rights either, I'm afraid, Neil McNeilis.
No, it's not. And again, as when I was making the case the last day, along with other councillors that I had a presentation on Monday, we explained straight out that, you know, while Galway looks like it's doing mighty, I mean, there are a lot of people leaving the city to shopping in other parts of the country at the moment because of the transport issues, and they do blame Galway City Council for that. But at the end of the day, this is statutory how it's done, how local government is funded badly. In my case, I say always is that national government relies on local businesses to prop up how the funding of local government is done. And you know, when you have to fix roads, and that this is the path that you come into as well to fix those roads. And when you don't have enough money coming in, you can't get them all done. And that's why local government is struggling at all times. And remember, Galway City Council is still treated as a third-class local authority. We're in the same category as Leitrim and Roscommon. We're a city, and we've not been given the respect by national government in the way we're funded as well.
Okay. All right, Councillor Neil McNeilis, thank you for joining us today on the programme. The comment line's open if you want to get through to us. We'd like to hear from you today. And again, you can do so to 086, quite simply, if you want to get through to us, 38 33 55 3. That's 086 38 33 55 3. There was a major meeting last evening, indeed, of creche owners in the Maldron Hotel. A meeting took place last night at the Maldron Hotel in Galway with a large group of childcare owners, upwards of 60 creche owners, some owning multiple services, decided that they would have a protest closure for 3 days in the coming weeks. And I'm joined on the line by Teresa Murphy, who's an owner of a number of these facilities as well, with her mom. And she joins me on the line today. Teresa, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. Thanks very much for having us on.
Why was this meeting held last night? I mean, what are the challenges that are facing you in this sector?
Well, I suppose there was a big meeting last night of the owners, and it was called really because of kind of ongoing challenges and kind of a sense that, you know, the sector is kind of coming to a crisis point. I've never sat in a meeting, to be honest, Keith, with so many owners in one room and gone through the issues. And kind of the biggest issues that were coming out, I suppose the first one really is, they're all interlinked, but the first one really is around funding. The biggest issue is the core funding scheme and the effect it's having on creches, and how creches operate, really. We talked over it for a long while last night, but the general consensus is that the core funding isn't working. And the main reason it's not working is that it has frozen the creches' fees to keep to keep creche costs at a certain level for parents, which is obviously very, very important. But the problem for the creche owners and the managers is that the government funding that comes in the background to keep creches viable just isn't enough. And the issues that are flowing from that then are causing a lot of problems.
Teresa, who determines the charges in question that you're disputing?
So the core funding is a funding scheme that comes from the Department of Children.
Yes.
It's paid based on a number of factors like occupancy, number of weeks you're open, number of hours a week you're open, and things like that. and it's a payment, I suppose, a viability payment really to creches. But in return for receiving that payment, creches have to freeze their fees at the rate they were on a certain date in 2021. Okay. Now, for a lot of people, there's a big problem with that because they may not have increased their fees for many years before that. So while you know, we're representing that we're freezing our fees at 2021 level, in actual fact, if you hadn't risen your fees for a couple of years before that, your fees could be frozen at a level, from one owner said last night, I think a 2014 rate, which, you know, is putting a lot of pressure on.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the other thing, and I suppose the big issue for creches is that our costs have risen like every other business. You know, our utilities have gone up, our rents have gone up, our rates have gone up, cost of food has gone up. And the core funding increase that creches got this year for the incoming year is 3 cents per child per hour. I mean, it doesn't sound like much because it isn't very much.
How do you mean 3 cents per hour, per child per hour? So is that
per child per hour.
Yeah. If a child is with you, say, 5 hours a day, you get 15 extra cents, is that it?
15 extra cents, that is
per
the case.
Day.
And we're looking at a situation where there's an ERO, it's the Employment Regulation Order for the childcare sector, which is, I would be hugely in support of, because pay rates are and have always been a huge problem for the sector. But we're looking at a situation where there's an ongoing negotiation to increase the ERO rates for staff, the hourly pay rates for staff in the sector. And employers have offered, I think, 65 cents per hour extra of an increase. And when you look at that in the context of a 3 cents per hour increase in the core funding payment and no permitted increase in the cost of the childcare, there is a big, big viability question, you know, for creches. And that was unanimous around the room last night. There was about 60 to 70 creche owners. A lot of them had multiple services, and there was a huge issue, like a real big concern around future viability. I know in Galway alone, there's been 6 closures since May of this year. And I can tell you every day as a creche owner, the phone is ringing off the hook with parents that can't get childcare places. And when you take that in the context of creches closing, you know, there's a big issue to be asked, you know, a big question to be asked, why is that happening? You know, and the reality is it's just becoming unviable, you know, to operate.
So,
and
the care funding scheme then that you're talking about, that's the government care funding scheme that's there. But that funding scheme has basically strapped you down and said nothing extra on top of that. That's what you're getting. You got 3 cents per hour per child of an increase. 3 cents.
That's what we're talking about.
Because if you take COVID into account, and this came in 2021, so we were just starting to come out of COVID, but then the increase in cost, the increase in staffing costs, the increase in electricity, power, all that goes with it, insurance, you're saying that you can't survive. So you've decided then 26th, 27th and 28th planned closures.
Planned closures. I know alongside that then there's, and I know there's an issue that's common to all businesses. So, you know, I'm not saying that we're standing out on our own in this regard, but I think creche owners facing into a staffing crisis where the reality is, you know, a lot of people in the room last night were talking about how they have rooms closed across the creches because they just can't staff them. You know, when you're looking at the context of that, plus the financial pressures, there was just a general consensus that there was burnout. You know, people are really, they're burnt out, and nobody wants to inconvenience their parents. I can honestly say, hand on heart, no owner in the room last night sat there and wanted to inconvenience their parents. They stand by them, they support them, they keep their businesses open. But it's just come to a head, and the protest closure, you know, it's the only thing that the creches can do, really, to be heard, because I know the Federation Group have been at the table with the Minister for Children on this in the past, and I think basically it's just broken down. There seems to be no kind of taken on board or progress being made, you know, on behalf of the owners of the services. So I think it's kind of come to a point where we just feel that we don't have any other option.
Who are you targeting this at then? I mean, we've got the Minister for Children, we've got the Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, we've got all of these people. We've got, I mean, this all starts, by the way, in DEEPERS, and that's the department that's controlling absolutely everything. But who, I mean, the parents will be the ones, and I'm not being smart here, Teresa, but the parents are going to be the ones that are going to be most affected by this. You're being affected by it as employers and creche owners. But the people that you're trying to target mightn't be listening to this. Yeah. So how do you get that message to them? Maybe not by closing, but how do you get that message to say, lads, this is sink or swim at this stage? Now, you have the same anomaly when it comes to nursing homes, because nursing homes are strapped through Fair Deal, and yet the HSE can pay their, you know, it's about 30, 35% more that they're paying the public ones. I don't think there's public crèches. So it's the same anomaly that's there, but somebody has to wake up and smell the roses here and figure out that this is wrong.
This is a point that kind of came up over and over last night in the meeting, that while we don't want to inconvenience parents, the reality is when crèches become unviable, it is parents who are ultimately inconvenienced in services closing permanently. We've seen it in Cork there very recently, where there was, I think, was it three large services closed in a very short window, and children just had nowhere to go. I know myself from personal experience, I'm telling people on a daily basis, I'm sorry, we just can't help you. A, we don't have the staff to open the last couple of rooms that we have. And even if we did, we just wouldn't have the capacity to meet what parents need. It's a call for help, to be honest, from creche owners to do this. Parents are voters ultimately, and I know myself, I've been emailing local TDs. I emailed them on Monday, and I emailed I think it was four local TDs, and I got one acknowledgement that it'd be raised with the minister, and I'm still waiting even to be acknowledged by the other three, which is a bit disappointing. So I can assure you, like, creche, it's not the first resort, you know, for creche owners. We've been at the table as a group with the minister, but the minister has walked away. So while it does inconvenience parents, parents are the voters, and they're the ones who can have the biggest impact and the loudest voice to actually make a change.
So the planned closures are scheduled for Tuesday to Thursday, inclusive 26, 27, 28. I take it that's of September then, it is.
Of September, yeah.
Of September. So you're giving that notice right now. Now, I know yourself and your mum, you've got a few indeed, not just in Galway, but elsewhere as well. And do you think that to try and make it work, that you may have to close one or two?
We'll have to close them all, Keith. I think that's the situation we're in. The last night at the meeting, there was a pretty much unanimous decision that every service would have to close if our voices were going to be heard.
I mean, okay, closing for the 3 days, but I mean long term.
Yes. Oh, sorry, long term. We are hopeful that we won't, but when a creche becomes unviable, every creche has the same overheads, every creche has the same wage costs. Like, our wage costs probably sit about between 60 and 70%, depending on the month of the year it is. And when you take that into account, when you become unviable very, very quick. So, unfortunately, like, that is a looming reality for us as a group. And, you know, it's not that I want to worry parents or worry staff, but it's time to take action now before it becomes a situation, you know, where I'm ringing you going, Keith, we have to close. I can't get other places for the children. You know, we don't want it to get to that point. We want to be a viable sector with a healthy business that can reinvest in itself and have a better environment for the children that come in every day, and a better work environment for staff who, I'll give them a nod, they're working very, very hard at it's a very hard job, 51 weeks of the year, and they work very hard, but we need to create an environment where they have stability, where they have good pay, and that's another problem, is that I've spoken to a lot of the colleges around the country trying to recruit graduates this year, and I'm being told that graduates are coming straight out of the early years degree and heading into the primary school teaching degree, which I know we're short of staff in that sector too, but it does mean a kind of a brain drain on our sector, which poses future problems for us as well, I suppose, that are kind of coming down the line.
All right. Teresa Murphy, thank you for joining us. Owner of Spree and many more, indeed, in Galway City, County, and elsewhere with her mom and family. Difficult one. What do you think, though? Get those comments into us, 086 38 33 55 3. And the other TDs that didn't even acknowledge, if your office is listening to us, TDs or centres, will you just acknowledge, if you don't mind? I know it's difficult and I know the demands are huge at this stage, but please just acknowledge. Well, this caller said things aren't much better. As one of the detours in Athenry, some smart person decides to do some roadworks on that detour. Also, the one-way route which was put in place is not working. Someone is going to get hurt or killed in Athenry. And Galway City looks so derelict with all the beggars on the street, this caller said. Can something not be done about that? Now, let me move on today, because I want to go to Professor Frances Lucy, who's currently in an airport, indeed, to take her call. She's the ATU lead for EU Green University Alliance at the Atlantic Technological University, and based at ATU in Sligo. And a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us. Can I just ask you, what defines an invasive species, can you tell me?
Well, invasive species are species of either plants or animals that are introduced to Ireland that cause an impact. And that impact can be an impact on our own native plants and animals. In other words, an impact on biodiversity. They may impact on economy as well, and also have social or health impacts. And they're species that come in and they pretty much take over the space of other species that we have present here, our own native species.
And are they introduced by humans, or do they come in by default, or how do the plants and animals in question get into this country, get into our system?
That's a very good question. So we have what we call deliberate and accidental and natural introductions. So natural introductions are, for example, it could be a species that's just spreads naturally, maybe a bird that flies here, and that the spread of the green parakeet throughout Europe would be an example of that. Then accidental introductions, you might bring something home in your suitcase from abroad without realizing it, a ladybird or another insect that might be an invasive species. And then the deliberate ones are ones that are brought in by people for either for food or perhaps for hunting or fishing purposes.
I certainly know from a fishing point of view, we always hear about invasive species, say on Loch Corrib and Loch Mask, and the problem that causes. So what's that doing to our environment then, can I ask you?
Yeah, well, when you have a plant species which invades a lake, for example, there's a couple of them. There's the African curly pondweed, Lagrosiphon. There's another couple of the nuttalls, pondweed. And they are, if you could see them on land, we don't see them because they're underwater, but they spread. Just imagine your carpet at home. One day it's completely clear and looks normal, and then the next day it's completely covered, and all the way up to your ceiling in your room is just covered with this one plant, and it will just take over. It cuts out the light, it cuts out the habitat, and really impacts on the diversity. And of course, for anybody who wants to go fishing or boating or swimming, you know, they're swimming, suddenly they're trying to do their activities in an area where, you know, their lines are going to get snagged, their boats are going to get caught, swimmers will get entangled. So, yes, big impacts and costly ones too.
And from the impact of the analogy, which is very good, the carpet of the room being nice and clean, and then would they grow that quickly then, they do?
Well, a very good question, because particularly in freshwater, we very rarely see an invader until it becomes a problem. So the time it takes from the time that it's introduced to the time when it becomes invasive, it could be a year, it could be longer than that, because some of them have what we call a long lag phase. So, and there are natural reasons for that, which we don't wholly understand, but generally a species is at the problem stage, and that's a problem for us, because we really need to be halting the introduction, and if we don't halt the introduction, we need to be getting them at the early stages. So it's much easier to see a species on land than it is underwater. And, you know, there's a whole education piece there in terms of teaching everybody to look out for stuff, because during COVID and since COVID, an awful lot of people are walking around and looking at the ground, and their dogs are sniffing, and you know, they're out with their kids, and kids are really good. So there's a very good opportunity for citizen science, really, to come up with the evidence that we need to determine if there has been an introduction of an invasive species. And there's an app for that, National Biodiversity Data Centre. Have an app which you can download on your phone, take a photo of any species which you think you haven't seen before, and send it to them, and they'll check it out.
And can I ask you, just in relation to what these species have done, they're in our country, they're in our waters, they're in our land, the animals are that we're talking about, all of that. So, I mean, if we don't do something to stop it or do something to restrict it, are we going to have a totally changed habitat, say, in 30, 40 years?
We may very well have what's sort of known as a cosmopolitan landscape, where we may end up with far fewer species, that are very generic and found in many countries all over the world. So some of our native species, the native crayfish, for example, could be gone. We may have extirpations or extinctions of species, and we may have, you know, a broad landscape. So, I mean, if you're driving along the road in certain parts of the country, you'll see, you know, a lot of knotweed, primarily Japanese knotweed, that's growing in areas where there could have been 20, 30 species of plants there a few years before that. So yes, we are we need to act now to protect our biodiversity.
And from a plant's point of view, Professor, is there anything that can be sprayed on them to control them? I mean, not the ones in the water, but I mean the other ones you've referred to that are on land. Is there any way of wiping them out altogether?
It's almost impossible to eradicate species once they've gone beyond a certain point. So spraying, there are different ways to get rid of different types of plants. You might have seen, I'm sure you've seen driving around, people have seen this, do not cut.
Yes.
Don't ever cut knotweed, because it only takes a tiny bit of the root, shoot, leaf, stem. That's all it needs. It's vegetative reproduction. They don't spread by seed, so just a little bit of soil transport, and that's why they are along the roadsides and on waste ground and that, because people have just spread them in unintentionally. So what I would say about should you spray things, there are ways of getting rid of knotweed by stem injections, probably the best way. People need to avail of advice that's there. And they need to be given more advice. You know, education is a huge part, education and outreach in this area, because it's going to take all of us to actually manage to control the introduction and spread of invasive species.
Isn't it quite ironic, Professor Francis Lucy of ATU Sligo, that we've come so far as a country, but then we've brought other aspects in, like these species that we're talking about, invasive species, that are damaging our environment, and We get on with life, but in the future, we're not doing any favours for our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
We're certainly not, but I wouldn't be wholly pessimistic about it. I believe, you know, there's now a movement in Ireland to actually work on the management of invasive species, so that we're not giving up on it. And I think that the children have a big role to play, and they can certainly help us in their role as good citizen scientists to manage this problem. But we also need a lot of, you know, we need a lot of other things. We need a biosecurity strategy to prevent introductions. I'm sitting in Dublin Airport here. There are no protocols in airports or ports to check for introductions of invasive species. And we need to have resources. We need to educate people, and we need to get them to check. You know, we kept out foot and mouth disease. We know how to do these. If there's a big problem that's going to cause financial threat to agriculture or to horticulture, we bring out all the bells and whistles. So we need to be doing the same thing, because, you know, our natural beauty and our, you know, everything that we take for granted in Ireland is really at risk, and people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. So we need more funding and more education and more joined up thinking, all the government departments and agencies working together on this one.
Well, let's focus our minds today, but thank you for joining us, Professor Francis Lucy, ATU Lead for the EU Green University Alliance, indeed based at ATU Sligo. Thanks for taking our call this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, very good morning to you. Welcome on into the programme. 086 38 33 55 3. That's the number from there. And Keith, this good caller said, I've just lost that there now. Keith, escaped farmed salmon are an invasive species, yet our government are supporting the expansion of the salmon farming industry there as well. So we got many calls coming in on that as we speak today. Now I want to move on today because the Paul McKinney joins me on the line, Director of Operations for the Irish Blood Transfusion Services. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. Now, stocks, because of the weather and otherwise, are in low, are quite low, but you're in the Menlo Park Hotel just across the road from us. I'm looking over at it. You're there today.
We are. Yes, and you're quite right. The good weather, I'm sure everybody is having, loving it, but unfortunately it is affecting our clinic attendances. And we're particularly low on our negative blood groups, O negative, which is a universal blood group, A negative and B positive. B negative. So we're really asking donors, please, to make a big effort and to attend tonight's clinic.
So what should they do? They just can't rock up, can they? They have to call 1800-222-111 and make an appointment.
Yes, that's correct. If you would do that, please, that would be fantastic. Also on our website, giveblood.ie, you can also, if you have an account, you can book an appointment online, or you can register and book an appointment online. But certainly, you know, we really would ask, particularly for those negative blood group donors, to please help us and make an appointment.
And can I ask you, how low is low when we say that the stocks are low?
Well, overall, across all the groups, they're just under 5.5 days. We like to have 7 days, and that's what we strive to do. The negative blood groups, O negative is low. It's at 3 days stock. We do have a pre-amber letter warning out to the hospitals, just asking them to conserve their usage of O negative blood. B negative is also around the same, 3.5 days, and A negative is slightly better at 4.5. So they're low. Just as I said, with the good weather, this is a particularly challenging time for us anyway, because obviously people with back to school and people just still on holiday, it can be a very funny time of year for us, and we certainly do notice our fill rates for our clinics do fall, so hence the ask.
And Paul, can I ask you, just if somebody has never given blood and they're listening to this morning saying, look, I've been thinking about doing that but I haven't done it, and that they're eligible, should they make an appointment now, or would you prefer them to wait for another time because you need the stocks of blood instead?
We're sort of asking particularly just for regular donors to come in at the moment. But yeah, all the information is on our website, giveblood.ie. We have a section on it for new donors, and we really do need new donors. Obviously with COVID, our new donor collections or response were low, so we are really pushing for new donors. There's information on it. There is a register interest section, so if you are interested in becoming a new donor, please fill in that registered interest section on our website, and we will be in touch with you. I mean, the best thing is also the number that you called out earlier. If people would like to ring that, maybe chat to one of my colleagues, they can talk a potential first-time donor through the process. It takes about an hour and a half. And, you know, when you do become a donor and you start to hopefully donate regularly, at the end, when your donation is issued to a hospital, we do send a text to that donor that their donation has been issued to a hospital. And, you know, imagine the feeling of getting that text, knowing that that 2 hours that you took out to attend a clinic has saved or improved somebody's life. Wow. What an amazing feeling.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
Listen, Paul McKinney, Director of Operations for the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, Menlo Park Hotel today in Terryland. Make an appointment on 1800-222-111. That's 1800-222-111. And again, they're there from 10 to 4 until 10 past 8. And it's an urgent appeal for blood donations as supplies are falling. If you can assist in any way, please, please do so. And do so to 1800-222-111. Paul, keep in contact. Thanks for joining us today on the programme.
Thank you very much.
And a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. Now, yet to come on the programme, by the way, we're going to that tragedy that unfolded yesterday evening in Tuam following the unfortunate accident of a young man, indeed, who was on a tractor, fell, ended up in Beaumont, and unfortunately Adam Higgins was a fifth year student in St. Charles College in Tuam, and he passed away. Our thoughts are with his extended family and extended family. We'll go to that shortly, though. It's just another tragedy for another family.